2619. Jan, if you could summarize the bill, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill requires a person who's operating a landscape maintenance business to register with the Landscape Contractors Board. It requires the business to be insured for at least $100,000 and it allows civil penalties for violations. And you have before you a dash one amendment that clarifies that the business doesn't need to register if it's already licensed and allows the board to revoke, suspend, or refuse to register a business that's not in compliance with various statutes. And it prohibits the landscape business from filing a lien, a claim with the board, or court action for compensation for performance of work or breach of contract.
Okay, thank you. We have two people signed up to speak on this issue, Mark Kemper and Shelley Sneed. In fact, to come up and... Thank you. And if you could make sure you identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Mark Kemper. Good morning, Chair Doherty and honorable committee members. Thank you for allowing me to come here and speak. When I brought this to the attention and to get this bill going, my intent of this bill and why it's necessary, I'll read a little bit here. My name is Mark Kemper, and I've been in business for over 25 years. I own Halmark Landscape Maintenance in Salem. I have owned a full landscape and design business in the past, and in 95, made the choice to stay in landscape maintenance. My intent for this House Bill 2619 is to provide consumer protection. There has been such an increase in landscape maintenance, and so many are without insurance and no governing body to oversee the industry, that it puts the consumer at risk if damages are done to their home or property or workers. If the business has employees and no workman's comp, then a property owner could or would be held liable. Unfortunately, for people who work in the horticultural business, they are more likely to get hurt on the job than any other work in other environments, such as office, retail. Falling down and heavy lifting on the job are two common workplace injuries. While employees of any industry are susceptible, horticultural and construction workers are particularly at risk. We have so many people retiring and are now on fixed income, and if this should happen to them, it would be a financial hardship. My intent with this bill is not to put anybody out of business, but to help, plus educate them in many areas of the industry. A time came when landscapers needed to be licensed, and now with so many doing maintenance, that is now time to bring them under the landscape board. I again ask that you consider this bill to protect the consumers of Oregon and make the industry more accountable and safer for the customers of this industry. There's a bottom of this, there's an overview that I thought was very good that Shelley wrote. But that's where my intent was for consumer protection. We have so many people that are going on fixed income now, and there's so many people out here doing this work. It's time for it to come under the landscape.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shelley Sneed, Administrator of the Landscape Contractors Board. Good morning, Chair Doherty and honorable committee members. Thank you for allowing us to testify today on House Bill 2619, bright and early on Monday morning. This bill would require any business performing landscape maintenance work in Oregon be registered with the Landscape Contractors Board, as Mr. Kemper said. This bill was not introduced by the agency, just to make that clear. It was presented by Representative Klim after a request by Mark Kemper, who's here today. Our agency has worked with Mr. Kemper on the drafts of this legislation, and at the board's January 17th meeting voted to support this bill. We've worked with the governor's office and Representative Klim, the bill sponsor, and support this bill along with the amendments that you see today. In past legislative sessions, the agency had requested similar legislation that would have required licensure for maintenance businesses. This bill has less onerous requirements, but ensures that Oregonians purchasing landscape maintenance services have insurance and workers' compensation insurance that protects the property owner in the event that damage occurs in the property. Since the landscape maintenance industry is currently unregulated, there is little documentation about existing consumer damage. There are two agencies exempted from this bill in the amendment that you received today. As written, any licensees of our agency, the Landscape Contractors Board, and the Construction Contractors Board would not be required to register as a maintenance business. We know a number of those businesses are currently doing this work. If this legislation is passed, the agency intends to collect a minor fee for registration. The intent isn't to overburden individuals or businesses that may be performing this work as a means of supporting a family that otherwise may have little resources. We are aware that many of these businesses are individuals who have mowers, blowers, edgers, rakes, and other simple lawn equipment. They may have formerly been employed and now have resorted to doing this work after a job loss. That's not every landscape maintenance business. There are others that are long-standing businesses with a greater investment in equipment, business systems, and materials, such as Mr. Kemper's business that he talked a little bit about. This registration builds a system of monitoring this industry to ensure that consumers have some level of recourse in the event of damage to their property. The secondary benefit is having a database of what has been an unregulated industry that the agency can communicate with to ensure that they understand how to operate a business in Oregon. Many of the businesses may not be aware of pesticide licensing requirements. Many aren't aware of the need to register their business name with the Secretary of State. This registration isn't intended to be a challenge or impediment to business ownership, It's intended to educate and inform a set of business operators that may not be aware of the legal requirements of operating a business in Oregon. Thank you, Chair Doherty and committee members.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Representative Fagan.
So in looking at the definitions, I think my concern would be that this would cover the 16-year-old high school kid who's trying to raise money by mowing lawns. I would not want him or her to have to register, to go through that kind of process. Where's kind of the limitations of who you're actually trying to cover as someone who, runs an actual business and would be dealing in things like fertilizers and pesticides and cutting off, the high school kid who's trying to raise a few bucks by mowing lawns or pulling weeds in the little old lady's garden next door? Because as it's written, it seems a little overly broad to me to encompass those activities.
Whichever.
Either one, yeah.
Either one.
Well, I don't want anything to interfere with a high school student that's going to go out and be energetic to work. I that's great. That's fantastic. In fact, we need more of it. If you're over the age of 18 and you're out of high school and you're doing this still to make money, then yes. If you're a college student in between terms, then that I would be exceptions.
So can I just add on to that?
Yeah.
So there's in the bill language, there's an exempt. So the agency can create rules for casual, minor, inconsequential, which we currently have in our current statute. So this would be unique to this statute if it was approved. So that's where we're anticipating making those clarifications on who would actually fall into the jurisdiction of this bill if it was passed into legislation. So Mark has consistently talked to folks. Our agency understands that unless they're operating as a formal business under the age of 18, that would probably fall within that definition of casual, minor, and inconsequential maintenance work.
I think for my purposes, I would want it to be clarified in the statute. Just, I'm just a big believer in the law should say what we mean the law to say. I understand that rulemaking can be, an additional step, but in this, if it was an additional definition or, not intended to include or a specific exemption that defines, I wouldn't want to leave it only to rulemaking because then it kind of could create a gray area for those kids trying to, make a few bucks and buy a new bicycle or whatever it is. For me, I would prefer that it's defined in the statute.
Okay, thank you. Jan, you just have some clarification.
Committee members, I was just going to point out on page 2 of the bill, there is the provision that the business isn't required to register if it is casual, minor, or consequential, but it is up to board rule to determine what those terms would be defined as.
Okay, thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You said there are just a lot of these landscape maintenance companies out there. Do you have any idea roughly how many there might be operating in Oregon?
We've got Secretary of State lists last summer that totaled about 1,450 that were registered. And what we don't know is the number that aren't registered, and we know that's significant, but we don't have a way of measuring that. So we know currently there are about 1,450.
Do you know how many follow-ups, Madam Chair? Thank you. Do you know how many complaints there have been so far?
Well, let's put it this way. People that I've talked to, different customers, different people that I know, I've lived in the area. I was born and raised here. So the thing is that there's a lot of them out there that have complaints, but they don't know who to go to. They don't know where to go to with their complaint, because if they call the landscape board says, we don't oversee. They call the contractors board, there's nothing there. So the people are they don't know where to go. So the thing is complaints, that's another thing. How do you get complaints and who collects them when they don't know where to go? It's very hard for the people out there.
I guess I have one more follow-up. At the landscapers board, do you have, anecdotally at least, we get just so many calls, hundreds of calls a month about people that are unregistered landscape maintenance companies. Is there any record keeping or, at least anecdotal?
I've been with the agency 2 years, and we haven't got a lot of complaints, but I think the agency's been around long enough that folks know we don't regulate that. And when we do get those complaints, we send them to DOJ's consumer complaint line for follow-up. But I'm not sure what kind of data that they're keeping at this point either.
Thank you. Because I would automatically go to the landscape maintenance. If I had landscaping done, I'd probably call the landscape regulator.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they do. But there's nothing landscape board does.
I understand.
Okay. Representative Holvey.
Thank you. I appreciate the intent of this bill. I think there is a need out there for some consumer protection in this arena. But I am curious about whether we have a clear line between what is a landscape maintenance business as opposed to a landscape contractor business. And are landscape maintenance individuals, do they have any educational requirements? Are they able to handle pesticides? And I can start with that question, I guess. There's a two-point question.
Under the pesticide laws, as long as you're working on a single dwelling home that is small, and they didn't give any square footage on what small is or large is, you need no license. But if it's a rental home, a leased home, a commercial piece of property, then you have to be licensed in whatever category that you're using. Ornamental, turf, herbicide, moss control, there's 11 different categories. So it depends on what they are doing. If they're doing a lot of commercial work and they're putting down pre-emergence, post-emergence, spraying Roundup, yes, they need to be licensed by the pesticide division.
Follow-up, so you're saying that if they're contracting as a landscape maintenance business to do work on a single-family dwelling or an owner-occupied residence, they don't have to have any licensing or educational requirements for applying pesticides?
Correct. That's under the pesticide laws.
And the first part of my question was, do we have a clear definition of what the difference between landscape maintenance and a landscape contractor is?
We do. Current statute is very clear about what's landscape construction, which is primarily new installation of planting and irrigation. So nothing in the maintenance legislation that's proposed is duplicative of the current legislation for landscape construction businesses. So some of those businesses that are licensed with us may do maintenance. Our current statutes don't oversee that piece of work that they do. So their bond doesn't cover maintenance work at this time. Their insurance would cover that work. So they, under this new statute, wouldn't be required to also register because we know who they are already. In addition to CCB licensees, there's a public list or resource of how consumers can find them and how our agency can find them as well. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I understand the intent, and I always appreciate when people bring things forward, especially for their industry. I guess I'm curious about kind of the vague statement about a small annual fee, what that might be. And I'm also concerned that, you know, you have the ability, you know, to impact a penalty of like $2,000. That could be, you know, pretty significant. And also in the bill, it basically gives you the authority to shut a business down until they comply. And I guess my concern would be that the enforcement of this could be as simple as seeing a truck go by with a name on the side, doing a quick computer search, see if they're in your database, send them an email or a letter saying cease and desist until you comply, and then they go through this hearings process. I mean, you could put people out of work for a significant amount of time. And I really worry because we're talking about, more than likely, a very small business that's going to be impacted, not the larger business that actually does landscape design and maintenance. So I have some concerns, and if you could speak to that, that'd be great.
Okay. And remember, this bill is really early, so I'm not speaking
absolutely
on behalf of our board. Hasn't made any of these decisions.
Sure.
But my initial thoughts from the staff level is the fee would be around $50 a year, trying, again, to keep it reasonable, but to cover the costs of the oversight. Recent amendments have changed. Some of this bill was looked at to mirror our current landscaping laws. So we had a stop work order where people could, if they'd been licensed within a two-year period, could look at reinstating. This is a whole different ball of wax. It's fairly easy to register and to get insurance. So this amendment allows them 2 days to comply, where we wouldn't take action on them. It wouldn't be the intent. The original draft of this bill had civil penalties up to $5,000. So the $2,000 is the maximum and current landscaping statutes. It didn't seem that this industry should be more regulated than landscape construction businesses. So our intent, and I think if you look at our current rules, are to be very fair in our civil penalty structure. And our board recently allowed the staff to settle with licensed and unlicensed infractors. So I think we're doing a good job of trying to work with people and keep them in business as much as possible. And again, this is a registration as opposed to licensure, and we understand that distinction. So we're wanting people to comply, and there's a period of time, if this is enacted, to where we would actually start penalizing. So we'll spend that time helping people be knowledgeable about the requirements and getting registered with the agency would be our intent.
Yeah. Other questions? I do have one, and it's goes to how do people know that they are to register? I mean, I'm thinking of the people in my neighborhood who are retired, who go around and mow our lawns and that kind of thing, and they've got a little bit of a landscape business. But how would they know? I mean, I would tell them, but how do you get the word out?
So we have a Facebook presence. We have a pretty good website presence. We have the list from the Secretary of State's office. We've been working with newspapers about landscape construction law recently and got some fairly good response. So I think if we could get some free media exposure, I mean, we haven't done our full marketing plan yet. But again, we would use that 6 to 9 month timeline to roll out to make sure to do our best efforts to get the word out. And I think some of it's word of mouth. As folks start hearing that the requirements there, they're going to share that with their friends, I would hope, mm-hmm. to keep them from getting into trouble with the agency once it was implemented. But we would work hard to make sure folks were aware.
Okay, Mr. Kemper.
Also, we would get some information from the board, and a lot of us that are in business, we will take that, have those in hand. When we see others, we just say, you know, here's some information that you need to know. There's been some new laws passed. We can do some of that in our own industry to help out. My intent is to when I say I don't want to put anybody out of work, I want to help them plus educate them. There's so many things inside of the different landscape license and landscape maintenance that they could learn. There's classes that they can go to, and this may bring some of these that come in and they would like to do landscaping an easier door to get in to be able to get classes and stuff to go on and to be able to get be a licensed landscaper. That's what my intent is. That's what I see for this to go on, is to help to bring integrity and accountability to the industry and to help those out there. I mean, I've been around for a long time, and I myself have helped other people in business get started, or I've counseled them in their way that they've done business to help improve it. I'm here to help Salem. I was born and raised here. So okay. That's my intent.
Thank you very much. Any other questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, is anyone else to speak on this bill? If seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2619 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2907. Jan, if you could summarize.
Thank you, our committee members. This bill requires BOLI to establish a position that would investigate the misclassification of employees as independent contractors. And it directs BOLI to assess civil penalties for misclassification, declares an emergency effective on passage, and there are no amendments before you.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. We have three people signed up. Alana Guinea, Bob Russell, and J.L. Wilson. Maybe, Alana, if you would like to come up first, and we'll call the other two gentlemen.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ilana Guinea. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. We requested the drafting of House Bill 2907 because we see a small problem with how the Interagency Compliance Network has been working. The Interagency Compliance Network was created a few sessions ago by the legislature to ensure that our state agencies were standardized in their definitions surrounding who was an employee and who was an independent contractor, to ensure that those agencies were coordinating their work, sharing information, and that our laws were being enforced as uniformly as possible. From everything that we have heard at the AFL-CIO, this has been working relatively well. Whether we all agree that somebody should be an independent contractor or an employee, and there are debates regularly in the legislature about where different workers should fall, I think we can all agree that we're all better off when both businesses and workers know where those workers stand and who is responsible for what surrounding their employment or their contracts. We've heard that these agencies are successfully sharing info, that they are streamlining their work, that they are ensuring that businesses have standard definitions so that they can operate successfully. Unfortunately, we're only finding violations of classification of workers by happenstance. An errant unemployment insurance filing, tax audits, one of the few investigations that the Employment Department is able to do proactively. We think that there need to be more of these proactive investigations. Workers who are being misclassified are being hurt in the process, both financially and through protections that they are not receiving on the job. Businesses who are unintentionally misclassifying workers are finding themselves with large back payments when the mistake is eventually caught. If those mistakes were caught sooner, those businesses would have less back money to pay. It would be easier on them. And we think that this would all around make the system work better. We housed this investigator in BOLI in part because BOLI has a history of doing investigations into wages, and the classification of workers has in many ways a lot of similarities to those investigations. We also housed it within BOLI because, frankly, they were interested in doing this when we first spoke with them about 9 months or a year ago about the bill. We wanted to make sure that we weren't putting this on an agency that had no interest in doing the work. I'm happy to answer any questions about the intent of the bill, what it would do, what we're hoping to do with it. It's helpful. Thank you.
I do have one clarification, because I know in the next bill we're going to be talking about the interagency compliancy network. Mm-hmm. But if you could explain to people what that is.
Yeah, so that's the body that the legislature created, where the heads of various agencies whose work has to do with the classification of employees or independent contractors can work together, share information, and coordinate, like I said, impart their definitions of who is an employee and who is an independent contractor, impart their enforcement of those definitions, as well as a few other things. I know the Employment Department is in the room to testify on the next bill, and they can give you more details about how it works in the room and process, but it's made up of the Employment Department, I'm going to miss a few here, Revenue, I believe DCBS, and BOLI has been involved on and off to varying degrees with the network as well.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Any questions? Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Thanks, Alana. Are there particular industries that you expect? I mean, I think obviously something like this raises the hackles of businesses all across, and they're just terrified that they're going to end up, you know, being independently investigated and, you know, finding misclassification of employees. Are there particular industries that you guys think, gosh, if we had the ability to, you know, do these independent investigations, or not the ability, but so much as in an actual FTE that was dedicated to this, we could really crack down on a few industries? Or is it just, you know, positions throughout all industries?
You know, my guess is that there are industries where this is more prominent than others, but I am wary of calling anybody out because I don't know, and that's part of the reason we're bringing this bill, is we don't know where this happens. We only find these things when there's, like I said, an errant filing, something where a worker thinks that they're an employee and they're not, or they haven't been classified as one, at least by their employer. The employer files their taxes wrong and something's found. The Employment Department does a few proactive investigations, but not very many, and I think they can speak better than I can to exactly how broad their scope is for those and how many they're able to do. But we won't know until this bill is in place. A couple of things I want to point out about the investigations, actually. We have this set up, and it does start out with one FTE. Our original concept was to make that position as funded by fines as possible, so that if there are a lot of misclassifications, there's funding for more investigators. And if there are not a lot of businesses misclassifying workers, if it turns out that this is not a large problem, there are fewer people working on it because there's not the need. We really see this as something that should scale based on the need, not as just a position for the sake of filling a position. And I know that there are currently blanks in the bill where those fines would be laid out, and I know that's worried a lot of people. Our intention, and of course, you know, this could be filled in however you saw fit, but our intention was that a first-time offender, a small business, a misclassification that clearly was not willful, that was accidental, would be a very small fee, and that would rise with repeat offenders, clearly willful violations that affected a large number of workers, things like that, so that this should not be seen as a burden to a small business who doesn't know what they're doing, and we hope would actually be a benefit because they wouldn't have all of the back payments later if something wasn't found out until years down the line. But that it would crack down, frankly, on large employers who willfully misclassify workers and don't provide them the protections that they're due.
Okay, thank you. Follow up.
Thank you. And so regarding the investigation, I do a little bit of employment law, and so I'm aware that the determination about whether someone's an employee or an independent contractor is an incredibly fact-heavy type of analysis. So what, I mean, and obviously this is not going to be spelled out in statute, but what do you envision the investigation process looking like? It kind of, you know, popping into a business, interviewing employees, asking them whose equipment they're using, or, I mean, you know, just because it's such a fact-heavy analysis, it would require a lot of kind of questioning of the employee and the employer. So just kind of what level of disruption and just kind of what do you expect an actual investigation to look like?
Well, we've got a pretty clear definition with a very easy test that includes some of the things that you just mentioned. I think that any investigation should be based upon that definition and those tests that are already in place. I don't foresee this as changing anything in the law. In terms of disruption, I would hope as little as possible. We have agencies who have done similar investigations to this in the past. My guess is that they know how to do it in a way that doesn't disrupt work and that doesn't involve too many resources. I would hope that that's how they would approach this.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Holby, Representative Holby.
Thank you. I appreciate this bill because I'm fairly familiar with the Interagency Compliance Network as it was brought on board, and it does a pretty good job. But I think the intent of this bill is really to help fund that investigation. One of the, I think, things you pointed out is there's a lot of unreported income out there, and we really don't have enforcement to try to, catch that unreported income because it isn't exactly fair to people who do report their income. But the part about this bill that's a little bit different, and I support, funding a position to help do this, is that, and maybe that's the reason for the civil penalties in this bill, is to help provide some of that funding. Because it doesn't change any of the other enforcement or penalties that might be in place already. So BOLI doesn't, when they enforce an issue like this, what kind of penalties are there out there for the employers now? Or is it just a recovery of wages?
At the moment, Chair Doherty, Representative Holvey, the investigations that are done by BOLI, by employment, by the Department of Revenue, don't have fines attached to them. They're just back wages, back taxes, whatever is owed. The fine is in place in this bill, as I said before, solely to be able to fund that position. And my hope would be, and I'm not sure that it was captured perfectly in the language here, and if it's something that the committee is interested in, I'd be happy to look at an amendment to clarify this, but my hope would be that the position would scale based on the need and based on the funding available, so that if this is a large problem, we are putting money toward it and finding people who are not protecting their workers or finding businesses who don't realize what the law is and how they should be treating the people working for them. If it's not a large problem, there wouldn't be a lot of funding, there wouldn't be a lot of investigations, because there wouldn't be any need.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The other two, Bob Russell and J.L. Wilson. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. For the past couple of sessions, I've actually been up here with BOLI staff arguing in 09 and in 2011 when the Attorney General was requesting permission to get involved in employment claims and employment discrimination issues. And our point of view on that was that would muddy the waters, that BOLI was more than capable of handling these issues. And I think we're inclined to make the same argument here. And that is, I don't know in the context of current enforcement that you have with the Employment Department, Department of Revenue, Workers' Comp Department, and others, what the addition of one FTE and BOLI is going to do to significantly alter the enforcement landscape. So I'm just putting in our marker on this issue. We're kind of gathering information. I don't know enough about it yet to say we're a heck yes or heck no, but let's just count us as skeptical. The one portion of the bill that I know we would not support would be, in fact, the using the penalties to fund the position. I just believe that creates perverse incentives and would rather see the position funded because it's a good public policy objective, or not funded because it's not, but not to have the penalties kind of feed the machine, so to speak. So,
okay, thank you. Mr. Russell?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. The trucking industry has used independent contractors for decades. I first became acquainted with independent contractors in trucking, which we, by the way, we call owner-operators.
back in the 70s when I worked for my family's trucking company, and we had a number of owner-operators that worked for our company and provided the transportation services that we were providing in New Mexico. The legislature has been very active in this area over the last sort of 10 years. In 2003, there was lots of discussion about the independent contractor issues in Oregon. There was really no resolution during the 2003 session. But what happened is then Governor Kulongowski established a task force, and he got all the agencies together and the Department of Justice and told them to go in a room and come up with some uniform definitions and a way to enforce the independent contractor issues throughout the state, which they did. And they came back and they said, you know, we can synchronize things for employment and revenue, but we can't quite reach the workers' comp part of it because workers' comp law has a separate construct. It doesn't talk about employee or employment. It talks about subject workers. So the governor at the time said that wasn't good enough and go back and try again. And they came back a second time and said, we're still stuck. So in the 2005 session, as a result of the work of that task force, Senate Bill 323 was introduced, and that bill passed. Matter of fact, Representative Holvey sat on the conference committee that provided final approval for that bill. And what it did is it established in law the definitions of independent contractor for the Department of Revenue, for the Employment Department, and then it created a separate but slightly different definition for workers' comp. One of the things that we were real encouraged by is that those definitions also were very similar to the definitions used at the federal level, particularly by the IRS. So we had a uniform set of definitions throughout state government and between the different layers of government. Part of Senate Bill 323 required the agencies that were involved to cooperate. I think that direction was not taken as seriously as the legislature may have wanted. So in 2009, there was a bill that created the Interagency Compliance Network. And that is comprised of the Department of Justice, Department of Revenue, the Employment Department, DCBS, Bureau of Labor and Industries, the State Landscape Contractors Board, the Construction Contractors Board, and other state agencies that could enter into the intergovernmental agreement that sort of defines how that group works. From our perspective, that group has been very effective in enforcing the independent contractor regulations across the state. When we look at Senate Bill 2907, we have some policy issues. We're not sure that it's necessary. The Bureau of Labor and Industries is already involved in the independent contractor issues, as are all those other agencies that I mentioned. We're somewhat concerned about the lack of definition of the penalties, the blanks. I mean, it seems like that this committee, if you decide to go forward, would fill in those blanks so that folks would know what the level of penalties are. And we're extremely concerned about the fact that the penalties would fund the position. Within the executive branch, I believe that would be fairly unique. I understand that there are some arrangements like that with the Department of Justice, but I think this legislature has, generally speaking, avoided that kind of arrangement with executive branch agencies. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions for the panelists? Representative Fagan.
Thank you for your testimony. Good to see you again. Regarding the Trucking Association, have there been a slew of lawsuits from these owner-operators, you know, claiming that they are actually employees? I mean, I'm just asking kind of, has the status been tested and failed in court to the point where you're concerned that an independent investigator would come in and mete out a bunch of fines, or has there been employees who have or excuse me, owner-operators who have sued and found to be independent contractors, in which case, you know, an independent investigator wouldn't seem to find much in your industry.
Madam Chair, Representative Fagan, sort of the independent contractor issue goes with the economy. When I said we had a big issue in 2003, that was after the last big recession. After this recession, there are a number of my members that have had enforcement action taken against them. The most common are employment actions, the employment department, where a person will go and ask to receive unemployment benefits, and they may or may not indicate that they are an independent contractor. If those benefits are granted, then that file is then referred to the employment division's audit staff, and the audit staff comes out and visits and goes through a thorough investigation. And some of my members have been totally exonerated in those procedures. Others have not. We don't want anybody to operate illegally, and we support the enforcement that is in place, and we think it's very effective, and it's doing its job.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of the panelists? Thank you very much for your presentations. Anyway, those are the only ones we have signed up. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this House bill? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing.
Jan Meekers.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't see you back there waving.
I was tardy. Good morning, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Jan Meekums, State Director for NFIB, and I failed to remember you were starting at 8 this morning, so I apologize for my tardiness. But I also mirror the same considerations that were communicated earlier. And for our members, this can be a really critical issue, and as was stated, especially during a difficult and challenging economic environment. For our small businesses, the independent contractors can be a very integral part of their business. When business slows and they can't afford to keep the number of staff that they formerly were operating with, and then they have to let them go and depend on independent contractors to come in and provide some of the work for them so they can do it on an as-needed basis. And for others that were let go, that were not able to find employment, the ability to establish an independent contractor business for themselves to keep their mortgage paid and food on the table has been a very integral part, too. I have had more complaints in the last year from members having a difficulty with this issue than the previous 2 years combined. One was a mortgage company where they came in and investigated them, and prior to the investigation, they had already converted their loan processors to employees, but they were even questioning the appraisers they used in their mortgage process. They had been working with this for a year and a half. They had hired a single employee just to deal with the paperwork and the records that were being required of the agency, and this was the employment agency. And we brought in his representative, Representative Garrett, who met with us. He agreed that it was a very aggressive position. The member wrote a letter, and the investigation was dropped and it went away. But prior to that, they had told him that he owed $25,000 in past employment taxes. So this was a very difficult situation for him. I have another member, and this has been in the last 3 months, that workers' comp came. There was a claim. Workers' comp came in and determined that they were the relationship she had with it was a home cleaning referral service, that the membership, that it truly was a independent contractor status. But following that, then the revenue department came in, and they are with starting the investigation, saying when we're done, they will be employees. And they have caused them an immense amount of grief for over a year now. So this, to set up another person just for the point of investigation when we too feel that this falls within the ranks of Boley's responsibility. And the fact, again, that it is funded by the investigations is of great concern to us. So I would say, at best, we're skeptical regarding this bill, and too, we'll be watching it and being in communication about the issue. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, the example that you gave of the appraiser being considered an employee.
Yes.
Of whom?
Of a mortgage. It was a mortgage brokerage company.
Madam Chair, I find this kind of example distressing. Dodd-Frank clearly sets up lines of demarcation, and if we're pursuing these kinds of cases, I think it has to stop. There are enough problems out there that can be legitimately investigated, but in instances where there are such clearly delineated lines, I find this troubling, and I would like to have more information.
Okay, I can get you the information I have for him, and possibly he would even be willing to have a conversation with you.
Thank you.
Okay, yes. Thank you very much. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2907 and open up the public hearing on House Bill 2908. Jan, if you could summarize.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill requires the Interagency Compliance Network to review the statutory usage of employment-related terms and report back to the legislature by September 15th of every even-numbered year. Declares an emergency effective on passage, and there are no amendments.
Okay. We have three people signed up, Elena Guinea, Dave Gasfield, who is here just for information from the Employment Department, and Bob Russell. So maybe Elena and David, if you'd like to come up, and then we'll end up with Mr. Russell. Unless he would like to come up also.
I'm happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Ilana Guinea, and with the Oregon AFL-CIO. We brought this bill because every year we see bills brought to the legislature creating exceptions to employment status for various groups of workers. Sometimes it is an exception just to part of their employment status, an exception, for example, to coverage by unemployment insurance, to coverage through workers' comp. Sometimes it is an all-out carve-out creating a new class of independent contractors who might not otherwise fall under our state definitions. Often these carve-outs make good sense, given the state of the economy, given the work that these people do. We're not taking issue with those carve-outs by any means. We're not trying to change any of the definitions or carve-outs. But we do believe that as the economy changes, some of these carve-outs may no longer be necessary. They may no longer make sense, and they may actually be harmful to workers. There is no process currently in place to review these carve-outs. Somebody could know something about the industry, bring a bill to you asking you to change a carve-out that was made in the past, but there's no formal way to ensure that those are being looked at. This would create that process. We have asked the Interagency Compliance Network to do this review because it is the body that knows the most about this body of law. We're currently working with the Employment Department on a set of amendments, or on a single amendment, which would narrow the scope of this bill a little bit. They brought to our attention that this requires them to look through all of Oregon revised statute. Our intention was not to have them review every single statute in the state, but only to review the statutes that have to do with these carve-outs, with who is an employee and employment status or independent contractor status. We'd like to narrow that scope. We would also like to change the frequency with which that review happens, both to help with their staff time and also to ensure that you are not hearing reports every 2 years saying the same thing. In line 18, where it requires them to report back each even-numbered year to you, we would like to change that to every 6 years. I'm happy to answer any questions about the bill, and
am happy to also refer those questions to the Employment Department if they are of a technical nature.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, I'm David Gerstenfeld, Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance at the Oregon Employment Department. House Bill 2908 would direct the Interagency Compliance Network to review statutes that contain certain phrases, employer, employee, employment, and independent contractor, determine whether those phrases and the statutory exceptions to them are being used accurately, appropriately, effectively, and whether they're still relevant, and then to submit a legislative a report to the Legislative Assembly on what is found, including any recommendations as to whether any of those statutes should be amended and whether they should be repealed either immediately or at some set future date. The Employment Department is a member of the Interagency Compliance Network, and although we've worked with our colleagues in there, I want to make it clear I'm testifying for the Employment Department today. We do coordinate closely on matters like this and a lot of issues surrounding the employment and independent contractor issue. The Interagency Compliance Network does a lot of cooperative efforts surrounding looking at whether people are considered employees or independent contractors. That issue has a lot of implications for the workers and also for the businesses, from workers' compensation coverage, unemployment insurance coverage, taxes that are paid, coverage for minimum wage and overtime. There are some pretty broad implications. The Interagency Compliance Network does a lot of cooperative education and enforcement right now, so we are familiar with a lot of the statutes that we share in common that make that distinction between employee and independent contractor. As Alana mentioned, one of the issues that we saw reviewing this bill was that this would require us, as drafted currently, to look at a lot of statutes that might contain these phrases that really don't get to the heart of what the Interagency Compliance Network does. For instance, a lot of licensing statutes talk about who needs to be licensed and may refer to employees and employment. That isn't really what the Interagency Compliance Network focuses on, and we wouldn't have the expertise necessarily in that area. When looking at this, one of the things that isn't set out in statute, and we have had some preliminary discussions, would be the methodology of doing this review. And the Employment Department has volunteered to take the lead with coordinating the statutory review and preparing the report. We would anticipate that the initial report would take more effort than the subsequent ones. And that's just from developing both the methodology and also doing that initial dive into the statutes to see what the original intent was in creating some of the statutes and the exceptions. So the Employment Department anticipates that from our perspective, we would need probably two FTE to do that initial review and report of the statutes. We would be doing the brunt of the work and coordinating with our colleagues on the Interagency Compliance Network. We've coordinated with the Department of Revenue, which indicated that they would be able to provide the support, absorb that with their existing resources. And the Department of Consumer and Business Services estimates approximately a quarter FTE to do that. We do anticipate that after that first report, it would probably take the Employment Department about half as much, about one FTE rather than two, to do those latter reports. And I think that's the information that I have, and I'm happy to answer technical questions that the committee may have.
Okay, thank you. We'll ask questions here, and then we'll ask questions of Mr. Russell after his presentation.
Thank you. So I'm just trying to clarify. You mentioned changing the biennial reporting to every 6 years, but it looks like it would be reviewed every 2 years. Still, or would it be every 6 years on the review?
We would change the review and report to every 6 years.
Okay, so both, and thank you.
So you have an amendment for this?
We're working on an amendment.
Thank you very much. Any other questions of these two? Representative Fagan?
Just kind of a technical point, but because the statute specifically enumerates what should be reviewed, statutes with these specific words, be interesting to consider an amendment to include case law and rules as well, because under the statute as written, you know, you may have a statute that that uses the word employer in this context, but there might be a whole body of case law, which I would assume any thorough investigation would include. But sometimes when you specifically enumerate certain things and not others, it implies that you don't mean others. And so if the intention would be that they would look at also any body of case law that maybe is split in Oregon courts, or if it's going a certain direction, that would be included in the review as well as Oregon administrative rules using and defining those terms.
Chair Doherty, Representative Fagan, when we reviewed the statute, we did anticipate that because it talks about looking at how they're being applied and whether it's effective and accurate, that we certainly would be looking at case law, administrative rules, and things of that nature, whether that's explicitly called out in the statute or not. And in terms of the specific phrases that are there, that's one of the issues that we did mention to Alana in terms of trying to focus the scope onto the types of issues that the Interagency Compliance Network normally deals with.
Okay. Any other questions? We continue with Mr. Russell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. As I testified on the previous bill, Senate Bill 323 that was enacted in 2005 synchronized the definitions of independent contractor between the Employment Department and the Department of Revenue and Workers' Comp. And it also, the way they were written, it synchronized them with the federal level as well. So we have a common definition of independent contractor. When we look at this bill, and it requires the Interagency Compliance Network to advise the legislature on whether terms are accurate, appropriate, relevant, and efficacious, which I'm not even sure what that means, that this would destabilize the whole system if they were recommending even every 6 years changes to those statutes and definitions, then we wouldn't know what the definitions were going to be. People make investment decisions, whether they be independent contractors or whether they be businesses, on the definitions of independent contractor, and if those are constantly changing, that's going to destabilize the whole system. I think, at least from our perspective, as a matter of policy, we would hope that you would seek uniformity and consistency in this particular area of law. And that concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Russell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob, I'm just wondering how long the definition has been in force among the or common to all of the different agencies. I guess that's what I'm trying to ask.
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, that was the Senate Bill 323 that was enacted in 2005.
Follow up. And are you aware of problems with that language in the intervening years?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, I think that the basic definitions and the five-part test, I think that is fairly clear. There have been some court cases that have brought additional clarity to some of those issues. But generally speaking, I think it is very clear and instructive.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for the panel. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this bill?
No.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I close the public hearing on House Bill 2908. And I open the work session on House Bill 2241. Jan, if you could summarize, please, a little bit.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is a bill that you heard in the past. It is from the Department of Consumer Business Services, basically to adopt the model rules suggested by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. There are no amendments before you. There's no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2241 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Kenemer moves that House Bill 2241 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Brandon, will you please call the roll?
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Not excused.
Vice Chair Representative Kenemer.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. The motion passes. Is there anyone who would like to carry this on the floor? Okay. Both of you raised your hands at the same time. Would you like to flip?
Go ahead.
Okay, how about Mr. Thompson?
I don't like to talk.
Okay. I close the work session on House Bill 2241 and open a work session on House Bill 2688.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is the bill that changes the threshold from $250 to $1,000 for when a statement of account must be filed when there is a foreclosure sale for chattel. There's no amendments before you, no revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kinnaman.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2688 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Kenemer moves that House Bill 2688 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I actually would have thought this would have had a positive effect just because you don't have to file as much paperwork.
That's right. Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Brandon, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative Kenemer.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. And maybe we have Representative Berger ask her to carry this on the floor. I close a work session on House Bill 2688 and open a work session on House Bill 2909.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill changes the name of the Center for Research on Occupational and Environmental Toxicology to the Oregon Institute of Occupational Health Sciences. There were no amendments. There's no fiscal impact. There's no revenue impact.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2909 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kenemer moves that House Bill 2909 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Brandon, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenemer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Excused.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay, seeing no objection, the motion passes. I'm going to ask that Representative Williamson carry this on the floor. And I close the work session on House Bill 2909. Okay, anything else to bring up today? Okay, if not, we're glad that you were here bright and early this morning.
Oh, I know. Good thing we started early.
We just drive down. We also saw the sunrise. And that's it. So I adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Business and Labor.